G'day and welcome to Porsche Talk Radio. I'm Mark from Mark and Cars across most social media, and whilst most weeks I'm joined by Ajmal, who you can follow as Flat Cap Driver, this week's going to be a special episode. I spent some time with Mark Buick from Renan Motorsport and Sam Shahin, both involved in the Australian Carrera Cup. Mark will talk us through his experience and what it takes to prepare a car to be competitive in the Pro-Am class in this national category. And Sam is the owner and driver of car number 13. Hope you enjoy today's show. Okay, welcome Mark Buick from Renan Motorsport. Thanks for your time today.
How you going, Mark?
Yeah, very well, thanks. So it's been great to meet you and your team here at the Australian Formula One Grand Prix and get an insight as to what it's taken for you to put forward a competitive car in your category, the Pro-Am class, with the driver, Sam Shahin, we will have a chat to shortly. Tell me, Mark, how did you get into Carrera Cup vehicle preparation, that type of thing?
Well, I started out, I've always had a passion for cars. I raced cars myself for a number of years, horrendously expensive, so I spent everything I had and then bailed out of it. Then I worked for the Porsche dealer, and I met someone there that was interested in doing racing, so we started doing sprints. And then back those days, there was a category called Porsche Cup, which were a car you built yourself. Generally, you would buy an older car.
What year are we talking here, to give just some frame of reference?
Probably 1992.
Sure, yeah, okay.
So we built a car with another business in Adelaide called K&A's. And it started from there. I worked for the dealer. The dealer was helpful initially, said you can build the engine in your own time, which I did the engine and gearboxes and stuff like that for. And then I started getting more work and more work, to the point where I went out on my own. So I went out on my own in 93.
Big step?
I was single, had a lot of passion for motorsport, so working 100 hours a week I didn't really have much else to do.
Yep, so, sure. You still working 100 hours a week?
No.
Okay.
No, I gave that up quite a few years ago.
Yeah, good.
So we spent a lot of time. As any small business, you've got to put a lot of time in. So we started out with one other guy that left the dealer at the same time, basically, and we built it up. And back then it was called Buick Motorworks, and then we built it up. The race car side started first, and then we went into cars, and then one thing led to another. We got bigger and bigger, and the biggest we got, I employed 12 people.
Wow, okay, yep.
And we did a lot of road cars, and we sort of still did Porsche Cup cars, and Porsche Cup led to, that got evolved into GT3 Challenge.
Okay.
So at one stage we ran GT3 Challenge and GT, which Bryce Washington won a GT series and a Porsche Challenge series. That was back in 2004 or 5.
Okay.
And then Porsche Cup, as it's known in Australia now, Carrera Cup, started in about 2003.
Okay, and that's end of 996, start 997.
Correct.
Is that what we're talking there?
So it was the first evolution of the 996.
Yep.
So, and we had a customer called Bryce Washington that said, I want to do this. So we went into running in 2004. He bought a new car and we started in Cup Car then.
Yeah, okay. So when you say he bought a new car, the cars then were factory provided as race cars?
Correct.
Or were they road cars got provided?
No, that was the first time. In the past, everything we had made ourselves virtually,
yep.
out of Porsche bits. But then when Porsche Cup Car came in 2003, Porsche built the car off the assembly line as a race car.
Right.
The same as they do today. So everyone had exactly the same car. It was built to the same specs. So you bought one from the Australian Porsche dealer back in 2003, the same as you do in 2024.
Sure. So the cars then, like my observations over the last 24 hours of, you know, spending some time with you guys and seeing what's involved and the, in all honesty, a lot more rigorous involvement by Porsche and the scrutineers than I anticipated.
Yep.
Was it like that back in the 996 days, or has it evolved to this point? Have they always been this tight on,
Like, you know, you guys have just had to take some brake ducts off so to confirm you're using Porsche brake ducts.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it like that back then?
It has been like that.
Yeah, okay.
The intensity of it's changed over the years.
Sure.
Every now and again. Like, at one stage they had a shocker dyno almost at the truck, and you'd have to pull shockers off and get them checked.
Well, okay.
And then they would give you the shockers back to put back on and things like that. So it changes over the years, but Porsche recently have announced, or they've made parc fermé a longer time, and it's all driven by Porsche AG, and you know they're saying, oh, you've got to be, you know, more on it and stuff like that. So they have intensified it a little bit in the last 12 months.
Is this sport from back in those days, the, you know, 03, 04, is the sport better for it today than it was back then?
I think the main beauty of Cup Car is its level playing field, and that has maintained through the whole time. I can't really think of anyone that's been caught doing something
dodgy.
Really dodgy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's been an advantage.
Is there much grey? You know, like there's black and white, which is right and wrong. Do you get much area to play in the grey, or is it people looking for things outside, you know, to make up for their inability when they're going in that space?
Look, there's things you can try to fudge a little bit, but the net result is really not a massive gain.
Yep.
Now, the biggest thing and the beauty of Cup Car is the driver is really the main part.
Sure.
You know, I'd be fairly convinced, as I spoke to you yesterday, you could take the guy that just won the last race, put him in the guy that came last in the last race, and he'd be in the top two or three in the exact same car.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So, and talking about the cars, how much of the car can you adjust or change to suit A, your driver, and B, what you think will make the vehicle more competitive? What other than the driver, like what else?
Yep.
It looks like the rear spoiler on the current car is
correct.
Adjustable.
Yes. They've always been adjustable.
Yeah, okay.
And there is an element of tuning you can do for the driver, because a different driver will drive a car differently. Even as much as we were talking about camber before and the load in the corner,
yep.
A Pro-Am may not be able to use as much tyre as a Pro in the tyre, so invariably your setup might be slightly different for a Pro than a Pro-Am. Brake balance, so wheel alignment is free, the components are not free. You have a tolerance in wheel alignment shims and stuff like that, so you can change the camber, so you have a reasonable margin there. The rear wing is adjustable, like it's got 14 holes in it, you can do. And then the current spec car has been much more effective than the earlier car.
Sure.
The aero of a 992 is much better than a 991. So that makes a bigger difference. So it's mainly wheel alignment setup. Like the engine plant and gearbox is fixed and they're all exactly the same.
Sure. Suspension tuning, is there?
Well, there's no adjustable and no adjustability on the shockers. They had them in 996, had adjustable shockers, bump and rebound, but since 991, or since 997, they've all been non-adjustable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you have experience, like after the 996 experience, back essentially your first foray into that Carrera Cup here in Australia, have you been involved in Carrera Cup since then, in most seasons or most generations of the cars?
There was a period in the 997.2 we weren't involved for a couple of years.
Yeah, okay.
And then the management of, because that was privately run Carrera Cup in Australia.
Okay.
They actually went broke, Sharon's. And so there was no Carrera Cup in 2013, I think.
Oh, wow, okay.
And then 2014, with the introduction of the 991, we got back involved. We ran the Copy World team for another Adelaide-based people with Mike Armin. So we ran that for a number of years with a two-car team. There was Mike Armin and Ramsey was in the second car, and then the following year we ran, which is the first time that we actually had success in a pro, we ran Alex Davidson, Cameron McConville, which we won the Grand Prix
as
a pro. Mm-hmm. And the following year we ran Alex Davidson and Mike Armin, and we won the Grand Prix again.
Okay.
So that was the first time we really had decent success.
Team to beat.
Well, I don't know if we were the team. Well, we should have won the championship in 14, but everyone says, sorry, in 15, but everyone says that. We actually lost it to Matt Campbell.
Okay.
With Alex Davidson, so.
Well, he's come okay. He's gone okay. Matt Campbell since then, hasn't he?
He's gone exceptionally well, yes.
Had a pretty good run the last few months, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think that was a good intersection of driving careers. Alex might have been sort of at his tip going down, and Matt was on
his way up.
Other trajectory.
Yeah, so. Okay, great.
Yeah.
The so I've observed there's quite a lot of infrastructure involved for the support of a car at an event like this. Listeners, right now we're sitting in the cab of the truck that you bring to the event that supports the vehicle. Tell us about the infrastructure involved. How many people do you bring, things like that?
Yeah, okay, so that varies a little bit, but currently we have 5 people to support one car. So we have a truck driver / tire guy, we have 2 mechanics, we have a driver coach, and we have myself. So it economy of scales, if you run 2 or 3 cars, you can reduce the amount of people you have.
Sure.
Because you can multitask and stuff like that. So we're being only a one car team, I probably will, you know, run a few more people than multiple car teams. So.
Yep, great. And so that's what's in the truck.
Okay, so what's in the truck? So when you get to a truck, it's almost like a traveling circus, this whole thing. So I would see...
Hang on, wait, I've got to interrupt you.
Yeah.
You're implying there might be a clown.
Well, there's 4 clowns. There's probably more clowns than there is in the circus.
Yep, okay.
So we end up seeing, especially if you put in GT3 Challenge, which is the feeder to cup car.
Yep.
We can spend 20 weeks a year away.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see the same people at the track 20 weekends in a row.
Wow, just, that's a lot.
You pack up the whole circus and you move to the next round sort of thing. And then so when you come here, we invariably come here the day before the event. You've got to set up walling, so you're in the pit, as you've seen.
Yep.
You've got to get your fuel rigs out. You've got to set up a wheel alignment patch because you're checking wheel alignments all the time.
Sure.
Making sure nothing's altered since you've used it.
Well, especially
like
if you had a bump out in one of the events. Or
correct.
Yep.
You know, and you've got to carry enough stuff. If there's an accident, you can fix it. Well, fortunately, Porsche carry most of the parts, but you've still got to have all the stuff to be able to do it. So there is... You know, there's quite a few roll cases of equipment that you pull out of the truck.
Sure.
When you set up. So it takes us a good half a day to set up.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally you'll set up a patch, which is all done on level tables and all that, and you'll check the wheel alignment and all that once you get here, in case it's moved in travel.
Yeah, okay.
And then at the end of it, you just pack it all up in the truck and move on to the next one.
It's interesting that, you know, with the number of cars, I think looks like there's about 24-25 cars racing this weekend. I think I heard that there was 32 or 34 992 cup cars delivered to Australia.
Yeah, well, last year's field probably was 32.
Yeah, okay, so there are cars now not getting used.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. The that with that in mind, and you know, 20 weekends a year that you guys are all going the same place, I'm quite surprised that there's not some better infrastructure in place where everything's moved for you.
Yeah, well, things like that happen in Asia and Europe where they put them in containers.
Oh, with a super cup and all that sort of thing.
In containers and all stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
But here, everyone's based somewhere different.
Sure.
You know, there's basically everyone in every state. There's not a lot happens out of Perth, unfortunately, but every other state has a team in it. You know, we're probably the most remote being in Adelaide.
Yes, okay.
A lot of them in Queensland, Victoria, New South Wales. So we all come from different areas.
Yep.
You've all got to go, we go testing at different tracks. So you've got to have the flexibility to be sort of mobile, so.
Yeah, sure. And talking about testing, is there a limit to how much testing you can do in the car throughout the season?
No, unfortunately there isn't. and that some teams do a lot of testing, and that's actually the biggest part of their budget almost.
Sure.
Is testing, but there is a testing ban 7 days before an event.
Ah, okay.
So you can't test 7 days before an event. So.
Is it common for teams to go to an event or to a track to test at the next event? Is that a thing for closed tracks?
Common.
Yeah, okay. So
even places like Darwin, which will be the next one in Australia, I could guarantee half the field will go there before.
Okay, and then for like a fortnight before or 10 days before, test for a few days, lock the cars down for the week and sit in the sun and...
Oh, well, they'll probably take them back to the workshop.
Yeah, okay.
And they'll probably go through them again, then they'll go testing somewhere else.
Ah, okay.
Some of the big teams, especially when you've got a kid that doesn't work, which a lot of the younger pros do.
Sure.
That's their life. You know, they just go out and they'll go and test the next circuit.
Actually, we haven't discussed that yet. The actual categories, there's two categories of racing in Carrera Cup.
Correct.
Let's talk about them. So we've got Pro and we've got Pro-Am.
Yep.
What's the difference there?
Okay, so Pro is someone that's under, roughly, it's a little bit ambiguous, but someone under 35.
Sure.
That wants to make a career out of motorsport or doesn't really have a job or has come like V8 supercar drivers that have got a bit older and moved out and have done a lot of driving. Still pros like Wood and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then the Pro-Ams are the gentleman drivers, so they call them general drivers.
Sure.
Generally work full-time and I've got successful businesses and want to do this more as a hobby, although they all take it very seriously. So there is a difference.
So Pro-Am would typically be self-funded for the majority of their
All of them
expense?
Would be self-funded.
Yeah, okay. And,
yes.
And pros would be sponsor-seeking young people looking to come up through the sport.
Correct. But invariably, self-funded by dad.
Dad, okay. Yep, sure. Yep. Which, no, really, that's pretty common throughout most categories. It's not a career.
Motorsport is cruel.
Yeah.
and you can have all the talent in the world, but if you haven't got a backer, which is 9 times out of 10 your family,
that's
sure. got literally millions, you've got no chance.
Yeah, okay. It's, as an observer of the event this weekend so far, I was, quite surprised to see that there's no women racing.
There has been. Last year there was a woman.
Yep, but with the profile of trying to lift women in motorsport energy that's gone into it, particularly from Motorsport Australia, I'm quite surprised that there isn't some incentives in place or something to try and make it more diverse for competition. Is there a thing like that in place that you know of?
Well, Courtney Prince ran last year with some money from someone else.
Yeah, she's actually been a guest on the podcast in the past.
Yes.
Yep, so she's a friend of the podcast.
My understanding is she ran out of money, so she couldn't afford to run this year. So,
sure.
Like, it's a lot of money.
I can appreciate it.
And I can imagine, you know, someone might tip in $100,000 or something because you're a woman and that's seemed to be the right thing to do.
But sure.
But when you're talking $500,000...
Yep, okay, sure, I appreciate it.
You've got to be pretty keen. So.
Yep, sure. And the... on the cars themselves, everybody got delivered like a blank canvas, so to speak, when the cars got delivered. Was there any options when you bought a Carrera Cup car? Or
no,
is it
only in spares.
It's GD3 Cup, I think this car's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you could buy a spares package at the same time, could you?
Correct.
Okay.
So which is just extra parts you're going to need during the year anyway. But the cars were all identical. Like the rollout for this last one was done at Sydney Motorsport Park. Everyone rocked up. They were presented with a steering wheel because the steering wheel came off. This is your car.
Yeah.
And then you went down to the garage and Porsche had lined them all up and you had your car and they provided a half a day test day.
Sure.
Go out and try your car and take it away and then it's yours.
It looks like, from what I've seen so far, the steering wheel's unbelievably complex. You'd have to know what all those buttons do. I've seen less buttons on a video game. I'm quite surprised at how well integrated all the software and graphics and everything are for the driver and the pages that could be flicked through and that. That looked pretty interesting, and I assume the same software gets used to download telemetry that everyone uses the same product,
yes.
Do they?
Yep, everything's identical.
So there's really very little leeway for personalising what's going on here outside of your seat position by the sound of it.
Correct, you can't do anything. So there's two data acquisition systems in the car.
Two,
there's the PI data, which is obviously Cosworth, which is the dash.
Sure.
So Porsche used the Cosworth dash and all that sort of stuff. And then there's also VBox, which has CAN data going to it. So you can watch the video footage, which this year we're finding, you know, Sam is responding to the more of the video footage. In the past years we've used just an engineer that relies more on the Cosworth data.
Sure.
So, and that has a limited amount of data that goes with it.
Yep, okay, great. And with the, how much time do pro-am drivers spend on that part of it? You know, like with regards to reviewing?
Well, it's an individual thing, but I personally, I know from Sam, spends a lot of time.
Sure.
So, and if you're serious about any motorsport, the most expensive thing is to actually drive the car around the track. So any data or any video footage or any notes you can make when you come away from the track,
yep,
you can do all the homework away from the track. You can review how you can go better. You should be able to make notes. And when we used to run younger kids, we used to make run books and write notes down. And then so when they come to the track the next time, they can review what they did last time instead of just getting in the car trying to think, oh, where did I break in turn one again?
Okay.
So all of that stuff is really important. And you can look at the data and they go into things like brake shape and steering traces and all of that sort of stuff. And
do you get, from when the car's actually getting raced or it's out in practice, do you get live data feed back to pit?
No.
Okay. And with regards to communication with the driver during race, yep, is that open slather? You guys can have a conversation?
Correct.
Is it very common? Is there much talking going on?
It really depends on the driver and really depends on who's talking to him.
Yeah, okay.
So some drivers respond to a lot of information. Some drivers don't want any information.
Okay.
They want to just concentrate. And it's in place because we monitor race control as the car goes around. So if there's a red flag or an incident,
sure,
we tell the driver, you know, red flag, or, you know, the car off in turn five, or, you know, debris out or whatever. So we try to keep them informed all the time. And so, and if race control needs to talk to the driver, they communicate through the team.
Yeah, okay.
So that part's very important. And we use it within the team. Like every team member has a radio. Mm-hmm. Every team member knows what's going on. Like if someone has a flat tire and has to come in for a pit stop,
sure,
they've got to be ready, so.
Yeah, great. And with regard to the race control, yep, do they capture any telemetry or they rely on data capture from the team back to them if requested?
No, they'll only have their track position and stuff like,
sure,
that.
Sure, so, sure. Yeah, yeah, no, okay.
All that's basically.
And that's all GPS ran, I imagine, of some form.
Well, most of it's actually done by, it's not done by GPS, it's done by the timing loops.
Ah, okay.
So the track has lots of loops in the track.
Where those sectors are type,
yeah,
thing.
And
yeah, okay.
We all run a coded transponder in the car, mm-hmm, so race control can see where the car is going around the track.
Sure.
And they also use it for if he's exceeded track limits or he's cut a corner or anything like that, that'll pick all that up as well.
Well, looking how the drivers come into turn one over the weekend, I reckon there'll be a lot of that.
Yeah.
From the standing start.
Yeah.
How long does the engine, gearbox, drive shafts, how long does that stuff last?
Okay, the engine's 100 hours.
Okay. Is it 100 hours line in the sand or is it about 100 hours?
No, we ran on a 1.2 for Sam last year. They did 115 hours before it was rebuilt.
Okay.
So, but then occasionally, you know, Porsches, it's a pretty amazing the engines can go that far. Occasionally you can have a problem before that.
Sure.
But the port, you know, our experience with the Porsche product's been exceptionally good, mm-hmm, and it's never needed a problem. Gearbox is 60 hours on the current car.
Okay, and that's a sequential six-speed?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Who makes that?
Ricardo.
Okay.
In Italy or somewhere.
Yeah, okay.
So it's made for Porsche by...
Sure,
party.
Sure, and I'll make the assumption that because the known power unit input means that they can make that thing as, it's not a generic gearbox, that they could make it as small and tight as they need to deliver the outputs,
yes,
they need.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Everyone runs the same gear ratios?
Everything is fixed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the only thing we can adjust is the suspension, really,
sure,
which as far as wheel alignment goes.
Yeah, okay. Is it paddle shift or is it a lead gear lever?
Shift.
Yeah, okay, paddle shift, great.
Yeah, so.
And the, historically, I know drive shafts have a shelf life.
Correct.
How long?
They go on, I think it's 20 starts.
Okay.
So the biggest load is when you take off, when you've got a hot tire and you, because they take off on the rev limiter, so the throttle's flat.
Yep.
They just slip the clutch and off she goes. Is the quickest way to start.
Has a foot clutch.
Has a foot clutch.
Yeah, okay. It's the only time the clutch is used?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, once you've started, you just...
Yeah, it's a redundant pedal.
Yes, and Sam's now gone left foot braking.
Okay.
It's a new thing he's been trying since last year, so...
Yeah, okay.
Each drive is a little bit different that way, but the clutch is only needed to take off and then that's it.
Yeah, okay. And the brakes, in what type of braking system does it use?
Okay, so it's a Brembo brake package.
Yeah.
But some teams are using almost two sets of brakes a race meeting.
Well, sir.
But they're using that for pedal fuel.
Okay.
So I reckon we could potentially get three race meetings out of one set of brakes. But because people are now doing pre-bedded brakes, so you put them on, they reckon that has the best pedal fuel on a pre-bedded set of brakes.
Sure.
So some teams are putting two sets of brakes on the race meeting.
Okay.
So this race meeting, we ran a set of good brakes in practice. And when it came to qualifying, we put a set of pre-bedded brakes on it, which were all brand new.
Yep.
And he'll run them for this race meeting.
Sure. Okay. And they, well, I know you've done two of the three races from the weekend, and I had a look at the brake pads earlier. There's no shortage of meat on the things. So it looks like more, it's more about feel than it is about longevity by the looks of it.
Everyone's looking for that little edge.
Yep.
And if one team's doing it and they think it's slightly better, unfortunately, most people get onto the bandwagon, which just adds to the expense.
Yep, okay. The difference between first and last in each of the categories, pro and pro-am, it's pretty narrow, like, you know, with the same cars and then essentially driver skill and some minor suspension or alignment differences. How does the qualifying, obviously qualifying is extremely important in that situation, and the overtake opportunity is going to be dependent on each track, but there hasn't been a lot of overtaking in the races I've watched so far, unless someone's made a blue. It's like people are waiting for mistakes more than overtake opportunities more than anything.
Yep.
The how does the that would obviously set the cars up for more likely to have impacts and accidents, right? You know, touching cars, stuff like that. How often for you guys are you having to fix the cars at events in between races?
It varies quite a bit. Last year wasn't too bad. We probably had three or four incidents over the year that required repairs. And then, you know, there's been other years we've had a Bathurst where we've had to replace a front tub.
We've
had to replace rear chassis rails.
Okay.
You know, we've had, you know, it was disastrous, like all night stuff for two or three times because they've had quite big shunts each time.
Well, no one seems to have little crashes at Bathurst, do they?
No.
You know, when they have one, it certainly counts.
No. So there's generally one or two sort of major accidents around almost. So this one's actually been very clean so far.
Cross fingers, we've actually still got another race tonight.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right. But the good thing about it, you can skull drag it back into the truck and fix it back
at work. Yeah, back at work here where you've got a full workshop to deal with that problem.
That's correct.
Yeah. How's Sam been as a driver for having to repair the car? Has he been pretty good?
Sam has evolved a lot as a driver because we've run Sam for quite a few years. And he's evolved a lot as a driver, but he has spent a lot of money on repairs in the past.
Well, part of the learning curve, I guess.
Correct. Of late, it's not been too bad.
Yeah, fantastic.
And some things you can't avoid. Like on Sandown last year, he was really doing nothing wrong and there was a melee of pros in front of him. Someone ended up into his front guard sideways. Sure. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah, that can't be avoided.
It's all part of motor racing, I guess, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And are any pro-am drivers good enough to step up to pro?
Not that I've seen.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Oh, that's interesting to know. All right, then. Well, really appreciate you sharing your experience and knowledge there. It's been good fun talking. And I'm sure the listeners, if you've got any questions, send them through to me. I'll pass them on to Mark if you've got anything that I certainly don't know the answer to. And good luck for the next event today, mate.
No problems. Thank you very much.
Some great words there from Mark. I'm sure you've got some insight as to what it takes to actually do what Mark does. But now let's have a word to the driver, Sam.
G'day, Sam. Welcome to Porsche Talk. You're here to race the Carrera Cup at the Australia Formula One Grand Prix in the Pro-Am series, I understand?
Yes, I'm a Pro-Am. Sometimes that just sounds almost demeaning, like a professional amateur. but that's what I am. I'm 56 and living the dream of being at a racetrack. Could not be any better.
Fantastic. And is this your first, foray into motor racing, using Carrera Cup as your pathway there?
Yes, I'm 56 years of age. The first time I sat in a race car, I was 45.
Okay.
And I was at Malala Racetrack in South Australia, taking my road car just to see what I can, you know, as any ambitious motorsport loving guy would, just to see how fast I can go in a straight line. And I saw there was a racing car driver testing in a cup car at the time, and I was just in awe of the look and the sound of this thing, and I was just doing laps around this car when it was parked, and the father of the racing car driver who was driving that car must have spotted me and came over and started asking me, you know, who are you and what are you doing here? And I said, sorry, I didn't touch it. And once we were chatting, he said, would you like me to get my son to take you around for a lap at the end of the day? And I said, yes. What do I have to do to make that? He goes, no, just hang around. It might be a bit later in the day. We'd cut a long story short. I did. And I hopped into that race car. And I don't recall ever having that feeling, that visceral feeling of pure and utter joy. And I thought, I wonder what I'll have to do to one day drive one of those things. That's how the bug got into the system.
Yeah, great. And how long until you got behind the wheel of one of those types of cars yourself from that time?
This might sound a little bit scary, but a year later, I did my first race in Porsche Sprint Challenge.
Oh yeah, okay. That's the feeder series.
That's the feeder series to Carrera Cup.
Sure.
So all the Carrera Cup cars, once the new generation of Cup car comes out, those cars that were used for Carrera Cup then go down to the feeder series, which is Sprint Challenge, and that's what Porsche do globally.
So just, I'm trying to tie dates up here, so you would have done Sprint in a 997 Cup car?
997, yeah.
Yep, okay,
this
great.
Is exactly right. 2013, first round, I rented a car. I did the first round at Phillip Island. And in true form, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I went out in qualifying and flat spotted all four tyres on the first flyer and put it in the gravel at turn two. And so it was a very memorable event. Race day, I remember opening the blinds in the hotel and I saw it was raining. And I literally, my knees, I felt like I was going to collapse. My knees just wobbled so hard. I thought, yeah, I couldn't keep this thing on the track with slicks. So it was a daunting entry to Porsche racing, and it's like a drug. It's just it's an incredible predisposition.
Have you tried other categories of cars since? But you know, we're talking about 10 years now.
Yeah, 11 odd years of racing. I drove an open wheeler a couple of times. I raced an open wheeler. I absolutely loved it. Drove a Formula Toyota, an FT40. It was just
okay.
I don't think I've had more fun in a car than driving that thing. It was just amazing. I drove a GT car once, which was just incredible. It was like PlayStation. But traction, ABS, and I thought, if I have any ambition to continue racing Porsches, I really should not drive a GT car again.
Okay.
I think, Porsche, Carrera Cup, and Sprint Challenge, cars have no ABS, no traction control. It's just raw car, raw racing, and it doesn't matter what anybody says. It really is driver against driver. And that's how the bug grew.
Yeah, great. Your evolution as a driver, you mentioned that first Phillip Island raining morning, which well done for continuing, because I can imagine I'd be shitting myself too. The path up from there, like, yes. You've obviously put a lot of energy and time into going through that sprint, yes. Series into Carrera Cup.
Yes.
Tell me about that. How have you improved, yes. yourself?
I'm ambitious and I'm a perfectionist. And they're traits that sometimes are wonderful to have in your personality as personality traits, but sometimes I think in racing, I think you have to have them in racing. I raced in Sprint Challenge. I won a race 2 years later, and I progressed. But I saw Carrera Cup going around, and I thought, I wonder if I'm good enough. And the short answer at the time was absolutely not. Don't even think about it.
Sure.
Carrera Cup in Australia races mostly around street circuits, very unforgiving tracks. And, you know, people say you're not racing for sheep stations. Well, in Carrera Cup, it almost always feel like everybody is racing for sheep stations, especially at events like this, you know, the Grand Prix, F1 event. Take up an extra dose of stupid, you know, they see crowds, they see television crews and cameras, and just something different happens.
Yep.
Yesterday's race two was probably one of the first events at this Formula One event, I think in 7 years, that has gone the full distance without a safety car.
I was spectating the event, and, you know, I'll talk about that,
yeah.
how you felt in that particular racer shortly.
Yeah.
So that evolution, you've used other professional drivers for coaching, I see.
Always. I learned from day one. I am completely obsessed with the science of racing well and racing fast. And I think anybody who, you know, you need a lot of talent. I get it. You need to have grown up in a, you know, there's a wonderful, it's a wonderful background to have come through go-karting and open formulas and racing sedans and doing all those sort of things. I didn't have any of that. I really, at 45, I was behind the eight ball. So I've worked very hard from day one on learning the craft of racing, the art of racing, and there is so much to learn. And we were only discussing it earlier today. Yesterday, the difference between the fastest pro and the fastest pro am was 1.7 seconds on a 5.5 kilometer circuit. And that's a pro that has, you know, gone and proven himself in Europe, raced in Super Cup, and has won this championship 2 or 3 years ago. So it's an extremely competitive field at all levels in Australia. So after racing in Sprint Challenge for a few years, I thought I want to give this a go. And in 2017, I think it was, I hopped into a Carrera Cup car, 2018 I think it was, sorry. And in that same year, I raced in Sprint Challenge as well, just to do some miles.
Sure.
I thought I just need to stay in the car.
Couldn't you use the same car for both?
No.
You had an older car and always, what, 991.2 by
yeah,
then, was
that's
it?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
They're always different cars. So in 2019, I won the Sprint Challenge title. And that was just just an incredible feeling. You know, I'm a migrant refugee that could not even dream of coming to a great country like Australia, and to be in a race car and to win a national championship and in a Porsche was a special time. 2019 was a special car, and I've never gone to a race weekend without having proper equipment, proper support, a race engineer. And for the first time this weekend, a professional driver coach. I'm still learning, and I've got a lot to learn. I still have a lot to learn. 2020, I thought I was driving at my peak, really. By 2020, I really thought I was right on. I was driving in both categories.
Yeah.
And the year started well. I started very well. But that was the start of the... In 2020, I had a very nasty accident at the Bathurst 12 hour. I was tagged into a concrete wall, broke my back in two places, intensive care unit for 3 weeks. It was a tough year. But Melbourne Grand Prix was 6 weeks later, and I actually did come and compete 6 weeks later at the AGP and was good enough to finish on the podium. I thought if I don't get back on the horse, I'm probably never going to get back on the horse. And I had the intention of doing the whole year, but that was a COVID-affected year, and unfortunately, that was just didn't go quite to plan. Then 2021, again, I was driving in both categories, and I won the Carrera Cup Pro-Am Championship.
Well done.
In quite extraordinary circumstances, it came to the last race of the last round at Bathurst, and the winner, I was 3 points behind the leader of the championship in that year, and the rest is history.
Yeah, fantastic. In your time, you've obviously raced a lot of circuits now.
Yeah.
What's been the most challenging?
Challenging. Street circuits are challenging, but I love street circuits. I absolutely love the challenge of street circuits. You have to be so precise. There's no margin for error. And we race on some pretty tight circuits. You know, Gold Coast is a concrete alley. The first year I went to Gold Coast, I hit a wall and I broke an ankle, severe break. So I haven't held back. I've 10 tenths. You've got to compete at this level. You've got to be committed. And I'm not talking about commitment unfounded. I spend a lot of time and energy on my racing and to keep learning the art of racing. And challenging courses. I'd have to say Gold Coast is probably a very, very challenging track to get right. It's a very short track,
yep.
and a hundredth or 200th of a second can be the difference between pole and not. It has not been uncommon for the entire Pro-Am field to be separated by less than a second at that track. That probably comes to mind.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Good here. You sound like you've had a couple of bad pranks.
I have.
How's it going keeping the wife happy when you say, oh, looky, I want to go out again?
Well, the Bathurst accident was, when you're going hard, you sometimes bad things happen. Bathurst, I was tagged from behind and there's nothing I could have done about that. It was a very, very nasty accident. And she was at the track, unfortunately. And
whereabouts in the circuit did that occur?
Just before Skyline. Just coming off the Skyline. I was tagged from the rear left and speed straight into the concrete wall. Hit the concrete wall at 177 k's an hour.
Oof.
And it bounced me after 2 360s onto the middle of the track. And then another kamikaze pilot came through and his in-car data showed he did not even come off the throttle. He went through the puff of dust, zero visibility, at full throttle.
Oof.
And that was the second hit. So she was at the track, and since then she's come to every single race event. I think she feels a lot better, and I get absolutely spoiled.
I can imagine.
Same time.
Yeah, sure.
I get very well looked after.
Yep, very understanding.
Yes.
Where do you see yourself going from here in your journey and your Carrera Cup journey? You know what I mean? Like, how's it looking?
I'm almost addicted to Porsche racing. Carrera Cup is such a fine car and such a fine category, purely because unlike GT racing and other forms of racing, all the cars are exactly the same. It's only the driver.
Yeah.
It's only the driver. So, you know, you want to measure yourself against peers, against great drivers, it's the category. I think there is no other category that offers that, and at that high level. So it's a reality check. It's a great leveler for ego. You know, there are egos galore in motor racing.
Of course.
And I absolutely love the car. I've committed to continuing with Carrera Cup in Australia this year, but I'm going to, earlier this year, I went and did a Carrera Cup round in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At an F1 track, and what an eye-opener that was. Just such a, the level of professionalism and competition was extraordinary. So I'm going to take a leaf out of that experience and just go and try some racing in Porsche in Europe this year.
Great.
Again, there's the constant doubt in the back of my head, you know, am I good enough? But I think that doubt is important to keep you grounded and to, you know, it keeps me focused on learning and respecting tracks. And I haven't raced at any tracks in Europe, so I've got to learn, got a little learning to do, and we'll find out.
Fantastic. We actually have a lot of listeners in the Middle East and Europe for right. The podcast. We consistently rank in the number one in the automotive sector, so in the Middle East and a lot of European countries. So we'll no doubt have some listeners that will be rooting for you when you do get on the track out there. Great. Really appreciate your time today, and I understand Great. It's a busy weekend, so thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to both Mark and Sam as much as I did in interviewing them. It was a really privileged experience to get up close and personal to what actually goes on to be involved and see the manpower involved in creating a competitive car in the Carrera Cup. If you want to keep up to speed on the adventures, you can follow Mark at Renen Motorsport on social media. It's RENNEN. And Sam can be followed at Sam Shahin 13. That's SamShahin13. As always, please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. We love hearing from you all, and you know where to find myself and Ajmal on social media. We hope you're listening from behind the wheel. Until next time, see ya.